Parker Palmer tells a story that takes place in a time long ago, fast receding from memory, when there were no real security lines at airports and you could pretty much just take whatever you wanted onto the plane in your purse or your briefcase. And Palmer was on a flight from O'Hare in Chicago to Denver, and it pulled away from the gate, taxied and taxied and taxied. And you know that feeling when you look out of the window and you see like a chain link fence and you realize you're not lined up to near a runway to take off, and your heart sinks as the engines wind down. And the pilot in this case came on the intercom. He said, "I have some bad news. There's a storm front in the west," which is exactly where we're headed. "Denver is socked in and shut down. There are no alternatives. So we'll be here for a few hours." That's the bad news. The really bad news is we have no food on the plane. This, again, comes from a time when planes had actual food on the plane that they served. So everybody groaned. Some passengers became angry. But then Palmer said one of the flight attendants stood up and took the mic. "We're really sorry here, folks," she said. We didn't plan it this way. We can't do anything about it. We know that for some of you, this is a big deal. You're hungry. You were counting on getting lunch. Some of you have a medical condition and need to eat. Some of you may not really care. So I have an idea. We have a couple of baskets up here, and we're going to pass them around. Everybody put something in the basket. I know some of you have brought a little snack along, some peanut butter and crackers, some candy bars. Some of you have Rolaids, Lifesavers, chewing gum. And if you don't have anything edible, then maybe you have a business card or a picture of your kids or a bookmark. And the thing is, everybody put something in the basket. And then we'll pick them up at the back, we'll reverse the process, we'll pass them back through the plane, and everybody can take what you need. Well, Palmer said the first thing that happened was all the griping and the complaining stopped. People started to root around in their pockets and in their purses and briefcases. Some people stood up and retrieved their luggage from the overhead compartment, and they pulled out boxes of candy, a salami, Italian sausage, cheese, crackers, a bottle of wine. This is when you could put that in your luggage. Now people are laughing and talking. The flight attendant had transformed a group of anxious people focused on their need, deprivation, scarcity, into a gracious, generous community, sharing, and in the process creating a sort of abundance. The flight eventually took off and landed, and as he stepped off the plane, Palmer found the flight attendant and said, "You know, there's a story in the Bible about what you just did." And she said, "I know that story. That's why I did it." That story is found in the Gospel of John, chapter 6. After this, Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, also called the Sea of Tiberias. A large crowd kept following him because they saw the signs that he was doing for the sick. Jesus went up the mountain and sat down there with his disciples. Now the Passover, the festival of the Jews, was near. When he looked up and saw a large crowd coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread for these people to eat?" He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. Philip answered him, "6 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each of them to get a little." One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There's a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they among so many people?" Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." Now there was a great deal of grass in the place, so they sat down, about 5,000 in all. Then Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated, so also the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were satisfied, he told his disciples, "Gather up the fragments left over, so that nothing may be lost." And so they gathered them up, and from the fragments of the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten, they filled 12 baskets. When the people saw the sign that he had done, they began to say, "This is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world." It means so much for me to be here in worship with you at Cliff Temple. Brent McDougall and his wife Jen have been on a trip to Israel, getting back this week, I think. And what an amazing experience that is, and I'm sure that it has been for them. I got to go on a similar trip one time in 2012 with a group from our church, and one of the most meaningful moments for me on that trip was getting on a boat and going out across the Sea of Galilee, and I was surprised at how beautiful it was. And about halfway across, out in the middle of the water, they stopped the boat, turned off the motor, and I got to stand up in the stillness of that setting and speak to the group about Jesus coming to his disciples on that water in the storm and calming the storm. And I'll always remember that experience. Sometimes it seems like all Jesus did was go back and forth from one side of the Sea of Galilee to the other. Today he crossed over to the far shore, went up on a mountainside with his disciples, and then he looked up and discovered that a great crowd of people had followed because they had seen the miraculous signs that he had performed for the sick. And Jesus told one of his disciples, Philip, ask him a question actually, where are we going to buy bread for all of these people to eat? And Philip responded, 6 months' wages would not buy enough for everyone to have even a bite. It's interesting to note that the question Jesus asked was, where will we get the bread? And Philip did not answer Jesus' question. Philip's answer said nothing about where they were going to get the bread. He ignored Jesus' question. He assumed it was not a valid or a legitimate question. Philip's answer was, we can't afford it. And then Andrew chimed in to say, well, there was a boy that had some loaves of bread and some fish, but of course that's not going to go far at all with all of these people. What Jesus is up to here, his plan to feed this huge crowd with just that little bit, it scandalizes the disciples' good sense. And all they can possibly imagine is that if they just had enough money and if there was just a store close by, that maybe they could begin to attend to these people's needs. I think Jesus is hoping that his disciples will begin to let their compassion override their common sense. He wants them to go beyond the apparent limitations of the circumstances and proceed on faith. He wants them to tap into that holy imagination, because they are with Jesus after all, and they should know in their hearts that anything is possible. And here we are looking at our world with its vast needs. Earthquakes, hurricanes, flooding, and despairing. And looking at the vast needs here around us in this community and wondering. Jesus, do something, we plead. You know, send them somewhere. There must be somebody. There must be some program, some organization somewhere that can take care of all this. Jesus, do something. Well, Jesus does something. He turns to us and he asks us, so where are you going to get the bread for all of these people to eat? And that's not exactly the answer that we're looking for. Well, we don't have much. Just a couple of fish in our basket, a few loaves. But he urges us to take what we have and recklessly give it away. To just throw it away on the multitudes. Jesus' disciples were consistently astounded at how much he asked of them. At how much he expected of them. And we as a church should be astonished at what Christ intends for us to do. The feeding of the 5,000 is the only miracle that's recorded in all four of the Gospels. And so that suggests that the early church loved to tell this story and that they talked about it a lot. It's not the only miracle feeding story in the Bible. Somebody once said that next to Homer's The Odyssey, the Bible is the eatingest book in the world. In 2 Kings chapter 4, a man brings a few loaves of bread to the prophet Elijah and during a famine, and Elisha orders the man to give the food offering to all the hungry people. And the man is dumbfounded. He only has one sack of food, and there are these hundreds of hungry people descending on him like vultures, like when you bring out a loaf of bread at the beach, and the seagulls. And like our gospel story, there is this same beginning question: how can we serve so many with so little? And here there is the same conclusion. All ate to their fill, and there was plenty left over. It's the same old story that has happened over and over again in the life of the community of faith. We may be astounded at how much Christ has for us to do. You may be astounded at what is before you at Cliff Temple, at what Jesus expects of you here. Honestly, it is daunting. But God's grace can take what little we have and make it more than enough. It's the same story that has happened over and over again throughout the decades in this place. What Jesus asks us is, where are we going to get what we need to do the ministry that God is calling us to do? And when he asks that, will our answer be like Peter, that it costs too much? Will our answer be like Andrew, that our resources are too meager? It doesn't matter where, because we can't afford to do this. I don't know much about where Cliff Temple stands financially or with resources for ministry. I actually know nothing about it. I have been around churches enough that I can guess that your main problem is not figuring out what to do with all of the extra money that you have at the end of each month. I am remembering back to when I first became pastor at Broadway Baptist Church. It was the summer of 2009, and we were really dealing with a lack of resources. We were closing the church down in the afternoons early, trying to save money on the electric bill. I mean, we were doing everything we could to cut costs. And our agape meal, which is where the church sits down and has a sit-down meal in the fellowship hall with homeless friends every Thursday night. It's one of Broadway's signature ministries. We had closed that down for the month of July then in 2009 because we were running out of money for it. As you can imagine, it's a very expensive way to feed people. There was a lot of discussion going on then about how we were going to come up with the money to start it back up again and finish out the year. And I remember saying that summer, I had just come there, something about, I know I'm committed to the agape meal, and we all are, but I don't know the answer on how we're going to pay for this. I mean, we were really struggling with the question, do we believe that God will provide what we need to do the ministry that God wants us to do? And looking back on it, as so often happens, it's remarkable the way God provided. Brent McDougall has been preaching. I have been preaching these days about these big dreams, about coming alive, coming awake to the big plans that God has for us. Last week I talked about Samuel being awakened in the night with a call in his life. We talked about being interrupted by God to do something new and different, not because it is the logical thing to do or the natural thing to do or the obvious thing to do, but because you have had an encounter with God and it seems like God is calling you to do it. And look, I know that we have to be responsible. We have to be good stewards. And one of the hardest things about being in an institution like the church is the tension between responsibility and vision. You know, being responsible for an institution like a church, especially a big institution like this, can cause a person to become very protective of what is. But that very protectiveness makes it hard to respond to what could be, what might be, what if. I remember being in a finance committee meeting, and our business administrator, who was great, was always saying, but what if the money doesn't come in? And I remember finally in frustration saying, but what if it does? You know, what if it was great? What if it works? I mean, in the end, it comes down to trust, trusting each other, trusting God, which is hard. Look what Jesus did to his disciples. He tells them to sit the people down and distribute an amount of food that is clearly not enough. It is clearly not going to work. Jesus, send them away. There's not enough. There are multitudes of hungry people in Dallas, in Oak Cliff, and I don't mean simply physically hungry, although that's a part of it. There are multitudes of hungry people. And you have come a long way as a church and done so much. But honestly, the challenges and the opportunities ahead are also still staggering. How many loaves do you have? I think Jesus may be asking us every now and then to let our trust in him override our common sense and overcome our anxiety and go beyond the obvious limitations and tap into something that is only possible in our God-inspired imaginations. And maybe God will make good to match our gifts. The author Ray Bradbury says, if we listen to our intellect, we'd never have a love affair, we'd never have a friendship, we'd never take a risk in business because we'd be cynical. Well, that's nonsense. You've got to jump off cliffs all the time and build your wings on the way down. I don't know exactly what would happen if we just took everything we had and put it on the table and let God bless it. I don't know exactly what would happen, but it just might be a miracle. I don't know. I do know that when Jesus asked where they're going to get the food for these people, and Peter said it costs too much, and Andrew reminded Jesus of their limited resources, it hit me that the disciples had a firm grasp on common sense and logic and a poor grasp on the ways of God. And that describes us and me way too much of the time. What if we go for it? I mean, what if God makes good to match our gifts, our generosity? Give what you have to me, Jesus said, and now give them something to eat. And all were filled. The bread of life was abundant. And it turns out what they had was more than enough to do what God wanted them to do. They already had it. They didn't think they had enough. But Jesus challenged them to lay it all out there, and he blessed what they had. And when placed in the hands of Jesus, even human weakness and finitude become more than enough. I don't do a lot of cooking. I'm not a person who does a lot of cooking. And if I'm on my own for lunch or dinner, I will often make a peanut butter sandwich. No jelly, just peanut butter. I like to have two kinds of peanut butter in the house, crunchy and smooth. Crunchy for the sandwiches, smooth for the crackers. My wife, Jamie, is almost convincing me that it's worth it to go to the refrigerator and get the jelly and put that on there, that it actually does make it better. And so I've tried that a few times. It's pretty good. And chips, whatever kind of chips we have in the house, I'm not picky. I'll eat any kind of chips as long as they don't have any sort of added flavor to it, like barbecue or Cool Ranch or anything strange like that. And a diet Dr. Pepper or a diet Coke. I'm kind of into, you know, eating and drinking healthy, and so I have the diet Dr. Pepper. The other day I'd gotten out the bread and a plate and a knife, and I was looking for the peanut butter, and I looked in the cabinet where it's supposed to be, and I didn't see it, and I'm looking and seeing crackers and soup cans and microwave popcorn and all of that, and looking behind those things, trying to find the peanut butter. And at this point, I was starting to get a little frustrated. I mean, if some people would just put the peanut butter back where it's supposed to be, I wouldn't have to go searching for it. I knew we had some somewhere. I even looked in the refrigerator thinking that maybe somebody just might have not been thinking, you know, zoned out and had put it in the refrigerator. And I had to open the refrigerator door with my left hand because I had something in my right hand, and I looked over to see what it was I had in my right hand, and it was the peanut butter. And at that moment, I discovered that everything that I thought I was lacking, I already had. Give what you have to me, Jesus said. And it was enough. It was more than enough. As we sing a hymn of response about trusting and obeying, I invite you to ask again that question. Do you believe that you have what you need to do what God has called you to do? And I don't know what God has called you to do, but I invite you to respond to that call. And if in this case today the call is to be a part of this church or to share your faith in Christ with this community of faith, we invite you to do that too. And someone will be here at the front to talk to you or pray with you or welcome you. So I invite you to respond.